For me, it took moving halfway around the world, living in a place where I didn't know the language, the culture, or even how I was supposed to do my laundry, to become brave enough to start my own business. I was 24 years old, and I had a job that paid well, but I didn't like very much. So I moved to Budapest to teach English. And then eventually, I began working on my own venture, Atlas Obscura. I can't quite explain why, but that's just the way it worked for me. Somehow, once I'd left behind everything I'd known, there was no reason to keep doing things the way I always had. So I decided to start something brand new. That was the power of going global. This is So You Want to Work Abroad, a podcast from Cole Haan and T Brand Studio at the New York Times. I'm your host, Dylan Thuris, and as co-founder of the travel company Atlas Obscura, I've spent a fair amount of time traveling, writing, and seeking out unusual destinations to create a guide to the world's hidden wonders. Since then, I've noticed a trend. More and more people are pushing themselves to the next level and taking their entire lives abroad, forging new careers in faraway places. According to State Department estimates, the number of U.S. citizens living abroad has more than doubled in the past 20 years. Whether it's a temporary shakeup or a long-term move, people are figuring it out and actually making it happen. And as someone who encourages people to explore the world, I love it when people go all in. Folks often think to themselves while on vacation, oh, you know, I could live here. But then they fly home and forget about it. So I wanted to know, what tips the scales for people who've actually committed to taking the leap abroad? And how do they make it work? How do you take your career to a whole new country? Over the course of the season, me and an incredible list of guests who have taken their careers abroad will be sharing tips on how to explore the world professionally, from finding a job to navigating a different culture to learning a new language and lots of other tips. In this premiere episode, I'm exploring the idea that working abroad is a great way to invest in your career. I think that some people feel that taking time to see the world means putting their career on pause. But sometimes moving can actually advance your career or even help you start a new one. My first conversation will be with Sidol Neely, a professor of organizational behavior at the Harvard Business School, who writes and lectures about global businesses. She also wrote The Language of Global Success, an award-winning book where she chronicles the inside workings of a company's globalization process over the span of 5 years. Let's go. Sidol, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
It's such a pleasure to be with you today.
So we're going to talk first about this idea of the value in going global, both for an individual and an organization. On an individual level, why should someone think about leaving the comforts of home and going and working abroad and going through the challenges of a shift in culture and language?
Because number one, we are today part of a global economy. The McKinsey Global Institute predicts that by 2030, the global labor workforce will reach 3.5 billion people. That nears half of the world's population. Working globally or even traveling to work globally is no longer a matter of preference or choice or wanting to versus not wanting to. It's a matter of a business imperative or wanting to grow in your career. The second thing is, once you have a taste of it, you realize how vast the world is and how much you can expand your thinking, your creativity, your networks, your relationships, and your skills once you do. In order to ascend inside of organizations, and this has been true for decades, you actually need to have some form of meaningful international experience. Because once you do, you can actually come back to your domestic locale and become a stronger, better leader. So if you look at most executives at significant or major companies. They have traveled and worked and set up some kind of business in a foreign market before they come home and become executives and leaders in their domestic countries. The reason for that is they've learned the global economy, they've learned foreign regulations and having to grapple with the global local tensions, and they've learned to set up businesses in various markets.
It almost becomes addictive to work abroad. People expand their creativity. Why is that? What's happening to that person as they're growing in their work and life?
When you travel abroad, each and every one of your senses get stimulated in extraordinary ways. We connect with people in ways that we've never connected before. All of those things put together can become very addictive to people. This is why I've always encouraged undergraduates to do the junior year abroad programs if it's available to them, because it could be transformative. It changes who you are. And once you've had a little bit of experience with it, you're going to want more. And if you want more, you're going to have a completely different career trajectory for your lifetime.
What would you say to either an individual who's contemplating a move to work abroad, or an organization contemplating making a more global team but hesitating because of some of the challenges involved? What advice would you give them about making that decision?
For organizations, frankly, it's not a matter of I'm too nervous to do this. It's a business imperative. The reality is, if you are not thinking about the global economy or global arrangements, you're not only going to be left behind, you're going to get disrupted very quickly. And for individuals, I would say, just try it. Try it so that you can expand yourself, you can expand your team, you can expand your horizon in extraordinary ways.
That was a wonderful note to leave us on. Thank you so much for your time and your insight.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This show is presented by Cole Haan. As we've learned, moving abroad doesn't mean putting your career on pause. In fact, it can be what brings your career to a new level. I would never have started Atlas Obscura if I hadn't moved to Budapest and given myself the space to try something new. And when you make the leap to going global, you'll need to have the right tools. Cole Haan supports those who are working for what they believe in, wherever in the world it takes them. So I wanted to talk with someone who has experienced firsthand what Sadal described about building your career abroad, immersing yourself in another culture, and ultimately thriving. Lindsay Tramuta is a journalist and a Philadelphia native. She's written for T Magazine, Eater, The Wall Street Journal, and many more. She's called Paris home since 2006. She's also the author of the best-selling book, The New Paris, whose sequel, The New Parisian, The Women and Ideas Shaping Paris, will be released in April. Lindsay, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you.
I want you to take me back and tell me about how you first became a journalist.
So my path to being a journalist was actually quite untraditional. I know there are other writers who have similarly non-linear routes to getting to what they do, but for me, it started with writing sort of just for pleasure as a kid, whether it was poetry or creative writing. But ultimately, what I really wanted in life was to live in France. So as a career aspiration, that's not sufficient, certainly. You can't just, you know, say you're going to eventually live abroad and that that's your life. There needs to be something else. And so I didn't really know what that would be, but I knew I wanted at some point to get to a place where I was living in France. So The journalism came later. I studied French literature and linguistics in university, and then I ended up spending a whole semester in Paris and realizing, okay, here are some ways I could make it happen. One was by continuing to go to school. You know, you can always buy yourself some time by getting involved in a university and continuing your studies, and it allows you to certainly figure out what your true options are. And that's basically what I did. I went to grad school in Paris and I interned. I got into the working world because I knew that that was very important to getting seen by French companies. So my idea wasn't yet that I was going to become a writer and that was it. It was, okay, what are the steps I need to take to be considered for job opportunities in Paris? And that would involve needing to get a foot in the door in some companies. And then much later, what happened is while I was writing in more of a sort of advertising capacity, I also started telling stories on the side. And telling stories on the side first meant, you know, writing for myself, having a website, trying to tell stories about my experience as an immigrant living in Paris, trying to tell stories about things that were happening, how the city was changing. And then realizing that at a certain point, there were stories I wanted to tell that didn't feel suitable for my own audience and deserved a broader audience. And that's when I figured out how to pitch and how to get in touch with editors who might be interested in the stories I had to tell. So the idea of writing professionally came sort of at a second stage, and then in 2015 became what I was going to do full time. And so I left sort of the corporate world. But it's a long journey. And as I mentioned, it's not linear at all.
So you described the sense of really having always wanted to move to France. Was there a moment when you realized, oh my God, I'm actually about to move to France? Like, this is going to happen. Do you remember that crystallizing?
Yeah, I think it was when I realized I was going to get to spend a whole like 4 to 5 months in the city, which was already going to be like the first stage to seeing whether I could make it long term. A summer is one thing. Anybody can really do 6 weeks outside of their home country. I mean, more or less. But a whole semester of intensive study and getting by and living in a facility, like having an apartment and doing all those far more adult things in an environment that isn't your own was certainly like a big experiment. And I thrived. I mean, I really enjoyed it. And I felt like this was going to be home. It was certainly overwhelming because I'm bilingual now, but at the time it was still a work in progress. So, you know, we're talking about 13, 14 years ago. So I have to try to imagine that what I must have been feeling at that time was a whole lot of nervousness, but realizing that like, I need to give this a real shot.
Do you remember those first sort of few nights or first week when you didn't speak the language and you were trying to get set up? Do you remember how that felt?
Well, because I had started learning French when I was in middle school, I wasn't starting from zero, but it was still being in a place where we're far beyond simulated conversations in a classroom setting. So, you know, it's a real test of your own skills and your own confidence. And there were, I mean, I can't even remember how many times, but a number of times per day, I would feel very defeated because, you know, I'd make a little bit of an error in a conversation or at a bakery or doing simple things and then feel like I was barely comprehensible. And that's never a good feeling. And you feel like, am I ever going to fit in here if people either feign that they don't understand or they actually don't understand? So it was not so much the language barrier, but running into those moments and suddenly going from feeling semi-confident to completely insecure and trying to do normal things and sometimes even difficult things being the administrative stuff like getting your cell phone up and running or getting certain bills adjusted. You know, all of those things require pushing past any of those insecurities. And at that age, certainly, and only a few days into being here, were, of course, very daunting. So for me, it took a good 2.5 years of these ups and downs. And then finally, it was like something clicked. And I think at this point, I identify more with what that Europeanness is than what I recall life to be like in America.
Got it. So let's talk a little bit about how this decision to move abroad kind of interacted and even helped shape your career.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did you decide to leave your home, the U.S., and move to Paris, but you also left a steady job and became a freelancer. Do you feel like you're a particularly risk-prone person? Why all this risk, Lindsay?
Well, you know, I never was a very big risk taker. In fact, if I look back at the first time I came to Paris for those 6 weeks, it was my parents who did a lot of nudging. Then I think once I had been in Paris a while, by nature of, you know, like making that jump and going through all the hurdles I described, you know, you do get a little bit more comfortable with curveballs and the unknown in general.
How did you go about developing the kind of niche as a journalist that you did? And do you think being an outsider has been helpful or harmful in doing this work? Is it an advantage to be able to look at this place slightly from a different perspective?
Absolutely. For me, it seems that France is endlessly compelling to a foreign audience. Everyone is perpetually fascinated by France. So in that sense, it's been a very, very good thing to be here, because these are days when editorial teams are not sending journalists from the U.S. necessarily or from their home countries to cover things in the way that they used to. So having people on the ground is enormously helpful. I can help lead someone who is from the U.S. who's coming over to do some sort of reporting. I have freelance friends and other colleagues in different European cities who have effectively done the same thing. And it's about making sure you're sort of associated very closely with this place.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your book, and especially in the context of the way that this move really shaped your work and your career?
Yeah. So the book is called The New Paris. It was released in 2017. And it, for me, came from two things. One was feeling frustrated by the way Paris was constantly portrayed in other books and in the media. It seemed like, you know, the number of people I would speak to who had sort of negative impressions about visiting Paris really always stunned me. And I was wondering where they were getting all their information from or how they were doing their research. So there was that. And so I really wanted to take what I had learned and observed and try to bring that into life in a book that would bring all these pieces together. And I think from a publishing perspective, Paris is always a good brand. The reason I've been able to do it also is because I was able to connect with a lot of the people in that book in a more, not profound, but in a deeper way, because I can speak to them. I can let them speak in French. So absolutely, being here and on the ground and living my life in French ultimately has directly influenced my career.
So you're past these dark nights of the soul.
What, yes.
Now that you've been there, you're well established. What is the best thing about working abroad? What are the things that you just love about doing what you do, where you do it?
I think it's the people I've been able to meet. The opportunities for storytelling are endless. And I think ultimately it goes back to what I said before, which is that there is such a hunger for stories coming out of France. And to be in a place where so much is happening and you feel like you're watching history continue to be made and that you could perhaps have a role in telling some of those stories, I think it's like ever inspiring. It's interesting because when I talk to my parents about, you know, the changes I've made over the last 13 years, and they see this as being instrumental in me developing the wings that I didn't have before. I mean, I really limited myself socially, sometimes academically. I was afraid. And there were things I didn't push myself to do that I've had to do to make it here. And I definitely was someone that needed that nudging. So I'm forever grateful for having been pushed in this direction, because I'm a more confident person and I feel like I can go for things that I may have shied away from. So the sort of long-term benefit of living abroad shows its face in many different ways, but certainly for my own sense of self, I have a better understanding of who I am and am far more comfortable with others in a way I definitely wasn't before.
How do you think your life would be different if you'd stayed in the U.S.?
Oh my God, this is truly the question I ask myself at least once a year, and I never have an answer. I think it would look totally different. Would I be in Philadelphia? I don't know. Would I have moved to California? I don't know. I think life would look a lot more simple, probably a lot less challenging, and I probably would not have pushed myself in any way, whether it was academically, professionally, socially. I just would have followed whatever path was the most painless. And I don't think that amounts to being a very interesting life.
Thank you for being on the show. It was really wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you.
Going global can be great for your career in many ways. If you're feeling inspired by listening to Lindsay and Sadal, here are three things you can do to take action. One, take some time to explore the internet, maps, books, and everything that might spark ideas to decide where you want to build your new home. Two, once you've taken your pick, get excited about the language and culture. Build up that local knowledge and those local language skills. And three, see if there's a niche skill or special talent you have that might make you stand out. I built Atlas Obscura around finding strange and unusual places that other travel guides weren't writing about. Maybe you have something like that that you're ready to do as well. So You Want to Work Abroad is a podcast from Cole Haan in collaboration with T Brand Studio at the New York Times. Many thanks to Lindsay Tremuda and Sadal Neely. Have a question for me or one of the guests? Send us an email at workabroadpodcast@nytimes.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-481-0357. And your question may be featured on a future episode. Next episode, I'll be talking to Catherine Minshew, co-founder and CEO of The Muse, a job discovery platform that serves over 50 million users around the world. We'll explore the many ways in which you can take your career or business abroad, from company transfers to applying for international jobs to finding global freelance work.
I love working abroad because I think it exposes you to so much more of the world, and it really creates a deep adaptability, I think, in an individual. So I'm a huge proponent of it.
Subscribe to So You Want to Work Abroad so you don't miss a single episode. And leave us a review. It helps other people to find the show. Thank you for listening. If this episode inspired you to embark on a remote working adventure, great. But you're going to need gear that effortlessly transitions from business to leisure to whatever's beyond. It's a tricky combo to pull off, so it's a good thing there's Cole Haan. Cole Haan's shoes, bags, and outerwear will make getting dressed the easiest part of your trip. Find solutions for working, traveling, and working while traveling when you visit colehaan.com.